The big red feathered hat that Carol Channing wore in Hello, Dolly, a model of the fountain Gene Kelly and Leslie Caron danced around in An American in Paris, a charcoal sketch of Irving Berlin drawn by Ginger Rogers. These artifacts and some 400 more are part of the new exhibition Red, Hot, and Blue, a salute to American musicals. From now through early July, the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery, in collaboration with the National Museum of American History, is displaying the sights and sounds of that all-American art form, the musicals of Broadway and Hollywood. NPR's Susan Stamberg was there for opening night.
It was pretty glamorous for Washington. Klieg lights raking the dark autumn sky just like Hollywood. Inside, a lively band, white-gloved waiters with trays of hors d'oeuvres, men in tuxes, women in gowns, some of them the descendants of American musical gods.
I'm Ava Astaire McKenzie, only daughter. I have two brothers.
Once you know she's Fred Astaire's daughter, she looks just like her father. Short-cropped, straw-colored hair, his blue eyes and smile. 50-ish and compact in her red dress and satin slippers, Ava Astaire McKenzie says her dad didn't dance much around the house unless he was getting ready for a film. Then he'd go into training for about 6 weeks. But whenever he went to a party, of course, all the women wanted to dance with him. Astaire enjoyed that about as much as a doctor likes to hear about your sore throat over dinner.
Daddy was a difficult ballroom dancer. He didn't like to do it anyhow. The worst was at my coming out party when I was 18. There were, I don't know how many of us, 24 girls or something, all in our white dresses. There was the father and daughter waltz. Of course, all eyes would have been on him. And we did it wrong. We went the wrong way, against the traffic. I'll never forget it.
At the Smithsonian's exhibit of musical artifacts, two visitors inspect a pair of men's shoes, black kid, creased on top.
Do you see this?
Yeah.
What is it?
They're Fred Astaire's shoes.
What do you think?
I think they're really cool.
He wore them dancing with Ginger Rogers in Top Hat, 1935. National Portrait Gallery curator Amy Henderson tells how Astaire's shoes got to this plexiglass case in Washington.
We found this stuff at the L.A. Museum of Natural History. You know, amidst all the dinosaurs, what happened is in the early 30s, the major studios gave their stuff over to that museum. And now there's just this little enclave left with a wonderful curator who treasures these materials. And she delighted one day last year when we came, and she said, "Oh, you want to talk about Top Hat?" And she brought out, as if they were, you know, on a velvet pillow, the Fred Astaire shoes.
From Astaire in the 30s to Carousel in the 40s, the Red, Hot, and Blue exhibit has lots of film clips with scratchy sound, so visitors can see what American musicals looked like in performance. Rogers and Hammerstein are also represented by photographs. Rogers composing music for South Pacific at a table at the Stork Club. Nice work if you can get it, as lyricist Ira Gershwin once observed. A picture of Hammerstein working at his stand-up writing desk. One result of that work, a piece of yellow legal-sized paper on which Oscar Hammerstein wrote, crossed out, rewrote, lyrics for the title song to one of his biggest hit shows. Ted Chapin, president of the Rodgers and Hammerstein Organization, says this piece of esoterica settles an ongoing debate.
This proves to, for once and all time, what the lyric to the song The Sound of Music actually is, because in the original cast album, Mary Martin, clear as a bell, sings to laugh like a brook as it trips and falls over stones in its way. And Julie Andrews in the movie, clear as a bell, sings to laugh like a brook as it trips and falls over stones on its way. And about a month ago, this piece of paper came up, which is in Oscar Hammerstein's handwriting, correcting the lyric to In Its Way.
So the winner is in.
It's in, but I did tell Julie Andrews and I felt embarrassed. She said, "I'll sing it right from now on." I said, "No, you can do it any way you want."
To laugh like a brook when it trips and falls over stones on its way. To sing through the night like a lark who is learning to play.
Thank you.
no exhibition that salutes American musicals would be complete without the ruby slippers. Judy Garland skipped along the yellow brick road in them in The Wizard of Oz to the lyrics of Yip Harburg and the music of Harold Arlen.
I heard of once in a lullaby.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow has very special meanings to us.
Rita Arlen is Harold Arlen's sister-in-law. She was married to his brother Jerry for 25 years.
It's very personal for the family. We sang it at our happy times and some of our lowest points in our life together, Harold and Jerry.
Harold Arlen came to Rita and Jerry's house for dinner regularly. He loved my matzo ball soup, she says. Rita is her brother-in-law's biggest fan.
Harold is really the best, I think, in my heart. I used to do my house cleaning to his music, and I used to go around my house dusting, ding dong, the witch is dead.
In 1985, a year before he died, Rita Arlen helped her brother-in-law sort through his memorabilia. There were dozens of crates and boxes that he'd shipped to New York from California. As Harold Arlen sat ill in the next room, Rita Arlen found in the bottom of a trunk the Academy Award he'd won for Wizard of Oz.
He thought that he would never see that again. I ran into his den and knelt down in front of Harold and says to him, Harold, here is the Oscar. And he took it in his hands and he says to me, oh, he said, it's so beautiful, but it needs cleaning. I said, after 35 years in a trunk, who wouldn't need cleaning?
What'd you do, sing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead and go
no,
clean it?
I said, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, we found it.
Over in the Gershwin section of this Smithsonian salute to American musicals, two self-portraits hang side by side. George Gershwin portrays himself in top hat and tails, elegant at his easel, brush in hand. His brother Ira paints himself at his easel, too, in an undershirt, boxers, and a cigar. Sartorially challenged, you might say. His nephew, Mark George Gershwin, says the lyricist was musically challenged, too. Never really learned to play an instrument. Couldn't read music all that well.
He would hum, and he had this amazing ability to remember the beginnings of a melody that George would have. And very often, I mean, he would say, well, what? Maybe it should be this way or maybe that way. So, I mean, that's why they were true collaborators. I mean, rarely do you have brothers who lived in the same apartment buildings, lived next door to each other in Beverly Hills. They truly were collaborators in the sense because, I mean, they had so much of a life experience together.
Come on, Sleeping Beauty. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. I've been a soldier quite a while and I would like to state the life is simply wonderful, the army food is great. I sleep with 97 others in a wooden hut. I love them all, they all love me, it's very lovely, but oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, how I'd love to remain in bed. For the heart of
Irving Berlin's best collaborator was himself. He wrote the words and the music. Berlin taught himself to play piano, but not that thoroughly. He could only play in one key, F sharp. So he had a special piano built with a lever attached that would transpose for him, sort of the way a capo changes the key on guitars. That transposing piano is part of the Smithsonian exhibit. Mary Ellen Lerner remembers seeing the piano in her grandfather's office. Berlin's granddaughter, a singer, performs his songs with her band. There are plenty to choose from.
And the great thing about Grandpa is because he wrote over 1,000 songs, whatever the occasion. You know, okay, I'm thinking, well, our next show is December. Snow.
Her solution, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm. Mary Ellen Lerner has been committing it to memory. Irving Berlin's granddaughter learning now songs that earlier generations grew up singing. A nice continuity. There's more in this exhibit than remnants of pleasures past. Cultural historian and curator Amy Henderson says Broadway and Hollywood musicals played a role in the reinvention of American culture in this century.
What musicals do is they give words and music to the American dream. They're the hope, the optimism, the idealism. And for so long, there's such a central role in our culture that, particularly in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they kind of define a coherent culture that everyone embraces in the mainstream.
It's different now. Our society has become more fragmented, and few new musicals are being produced. But from the days when American musicals began in the 1860s, right through their heyday some decades back, the words and music of Broadway and Hollywood gave a nation of immigrants the same songs to sing.
One, two, singular sensation, every little step he takes. One, two, thrilling combination, every move that he makes.
In Washington, where the exhibition Red, Hot, and Blue, A Salute to American Musicals, remains at the National Portrait Gallery through early July, I'm Susan Stanbury.
You know you're